You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to Issues Etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
But in the consent-based morality, really nothing is sacred. No relationship, no encounter is something where sex would be off limit.
For Luther's part, he saw himself simply as a conservator. That is to say, he was trying to maintain and recapture and bring to the forefront once again the church's Catholic confession, that is, its universal confession.
No one can love like a Christian can love. No one can serve like a Christian can serve. No one can die like a Christian can die. And no one can forgive like a Christian can forgive.
This is John in Michigan, and as a Lutheran high school teacher, I love listening to and using Issues Etc. in my classroom.
Well, I live near a city here in the Midwest, St. Louis, that is known in part for not just its great baseball, not counting the last 2 years, but also for its museums, its attractions like that, for the mind, for the eye, for the intellect. And ordinarily, with the exception of the occasional controversial exhibit that we might find at your average museum, museums are not considered controversial. But with a name like the Museum of the Bible, which we'll be opening very soon in our nation's capital, there has been at least some perceived controversy. Why is that? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Thursday afternoon, the 26th of October. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly about a Washington Post story on the opening of the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. A little bit later, Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute joins us. Talk about three things: the ideology that produces men like Harvey Weinstein, California offering a third gender option, they say non-binary, in some of their official documents, and the medical risks of homosexuality in a book that documents it. Dr. Larry Rast will be our guest for part four of our series on the Conservative Reformation. We'll talk about the Trinity. Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will join us for his thoughts on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation from the perspective of the second largest Lutheran church body in America, kind of a bookend to our recent conversation with Bishop Eaton of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America on the same subject. And then we'll discuss obscure Lutheran saints. Matthew Block, editor of a new book, The Saints of the Reformation, will be our guest. Feel free to join us with your questions or comments over the course of the next 3 hours. Talkback at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address, our Twitter address, at issuesetc, on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about a story from the Washington Post on the opening of the Museum of the Bible, scheduled to open next month in Washington, D.C., Terry Mattingly, a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So why exactly is the Museum of the Bible opening in the nation's capital? Why is this controversial?
Well, you just did an interesting thing by adding the word exactly. You could say that there are a lot of very specific controversies about this particular museum. But at the same time, museums have actually been more controversial in Washington and in some parts of America than you would expect. And it often seems that museums get controversial when religion becomes involved. I mean, if you think back to some of the controversies that have surrounded art involving religion in art galleries, I can think of, you know, quite a few, frankly, from the last decade or so. So when you put religion in a museum, things tend to happen. There's an old story I've heard about someone who was a person who was not of faith, who kept bringing his child to a museum, to an art museum. And they would come there over and over, and they would go every Sunday morning. And finally, one time, his daughter, in this parable, said, "Dad, does God live in this museum?" And the father basically says something like, "No, he doesn't. He's left," you know, or something. I've heard various different ways of ending that. But the whole idea is that to some degree, for a lot of people, museums about art and history and archaeology take on a quasi-religious quality of their own. And this is particularly true when you put things on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., because of the implied government acceptance of those museums and their contents. During the 20 years or so that I related to Washington while teaching there part-time and then full-time for a decade, there were quite a few controversies about religion in the Smithsonian, especially religion having to do with science, or sometimes just religion having to do with the nation's founding. So we're dealing with a controversial subject, and then along comes a family, the Green family of Hobby Lobby fame, with the financial resources to buy a piece of land only two blocks or so off the Holy of Holies in terms of American secular religion, which would be the National Mall. For people who know D.C. and have wondered where this is, basically we're talking two blocks to the side of the Air and Space Museum or the Museum of Native Americans. So when you start talking about subjects that have been added to the mall recently, you can kind of see the kind of symbolism that goes with it. I mean, obviously, the Holocaust Museum raises something to a very, very high standing, in my opinion, as it should be in terms of global history. The symbolism that we didn't have a World War II memorial, the symbolism of an African-American history museum, the symbolism of a museum of the Native American. And then you go two blocks away from that, and you have this very rich evangelical Protestant family putting up a museum of the Bible. Now, you frame that, you know, in the context of debates here in America right now. Can you see how that would be controversial?
Yeah. I mean, I'm beginning to wonder how it could avoid controversy in any way.
Well, it can avoid controversy in the sense, on several levels. One, in the sense that they did it with private money on private land. So you stop and think, well, legally, there shouldn't be any controversy here. What's interesting is there actually have been people claiming that this was a violation of the separation of church and state to have this museum in that location in Washington, D.C., even with private money on private land, which, you know, raises the question whether for some people would it be possible to build this museum anywhere in Washington, D.C. without it offending their concept of American secularism, which, I mean, there's more to it apparently for some people than just no government involvement, no tax breaks that would not be offered to any other nonprofit of a similar ilk. The fact that there would be church-state debates with this has always kind of fascinated me. It seems that some Americans, and I think you and I discussed this recently when we were talking about the Bernie Sanders incident in the hearing for an economic official for the Trump administration, when he raised the subject of whether someone should be appointed to a government office of this kind if they believed the ancient Christian doctrine that salvation is through Christ alone. And Bernie Sanders said people who believe that just really aren't the right kind of American to be able to serve this. You might remember I interviewed a Muslim writer who wrote a very interesting piece about that event, a man named Ishmael Royer. And Royer made a comment that I thought of again when I was thinking about this museum controversy. And that was, Royer made the comment that many Americans right now are being tempted to move from a British concept of liberalism and tolerance to a French concept of liberalism and tolerance when it comes to religion, in which there are actual aspects of religious expression in a visible way which are seen as offenses to what it means to be French. Well, I think it's safe to say that for some people, the existence of this museum in that location is an offense to them in terms of what it means for them to be an American. And when you consider that the largest identifiable religious group now within the Democratic Party, according to the Pew Forum and other studies and interpretations of those studies, the largest group in the modern Democratic Party is now religious unaffiliated, atheist, agnostic, or the religious left, which might oppose the Green family and Hobby Lobby just on its face. So they were all convinced that this museum was going to be, frankly, what the Green family kind of said it was going to be initially, which was, they said this was going to be a museum dedicated to proving the authority of the Bible. Well, the minute you raise biblical authority, I mean, like the Lutherans have never fought over that, right?
Oh, no, never.
Nobody fights over concepts of biblical authority. You don't split the Southern Baptist Convention or turn it into a civil war for 10 or 15 years over discussions of that. There are no biblical authority differences between the National Association of Evangelicals and the National Council of Churches, or a lot of the churches in the National Council of Churches. So those were fighting words right there, and they were fighting words in the context of modern Christianity. They were fighting words in an era when the religious right has become so important to American political life as the dominant religious group within the Republican Party. And frankly, trying to do a museum in which they said they were going to base all of this on scholarship and archaeology created a massive rift between the Green family kind of serving as evangelical activists and the world of scholarship and academia, which tends to lean left. But even among a lot of evangelicals in academia, they weren't sure they were comfortable with saying, we're going to do a museum in attempt to prove that what we believe about the Bible is true, and we're going to call it the Museum of the Bible and put it two blocks off the National Mall. So there's another reason for controversy. We can go on and on with this.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll take a break, and when we come back, how did the Washington Post talk about the imminent opening of the Museum of the Bible? And there was another bit of controversy here having to do with how this museum procured some of its artifacts that was in the news about a month or two ago. We'll talk about that with Terry Mattingly, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and the book Pop Goes Religion. Stay tuned. We talk to the biggest names in religion today. Liberal Bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity, Reza Aslan.
by definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
I've got some friends down in Houston.
Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkham. We're talking about a Washington Post story on the opening of the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. Terry Mattingly is our guest. So, Terry, how did the Washington Post write about this upcoming opening and also the museum itself?
Well, first of all, I thought they did a pretty good job, and I wish they had done more with it than they did. And based on several things in the article, I think the Washington Post religion beat team, who, as I kind of jokingly said, thank God, they put the religion desk in charge of this story instead of kind of the more cynical crew at the style desk at the Washington Post, or, heaven forbid, the political desk involved in coverage of this thing. I thought they brought up an excellent point in this article, which essentially was, is this museum going to be evangelical enough to draw lots and lots and lots of evangelical tourists? Which kind of raises an interesting kind of angle on this project as a whole, and that's the kind of whole damned if you do and damned if you don't situation that the Green family found themselves in. When they said this was going to be a very evangelical building, everybody immediately jumped all over that, appropriately in my own personal, you know, opinion. But so they made the museum much more academic in nature, much more neutral. They softened a lot of its content, and they've said that the whole purpose of this museum is to convince you that the Bible is worth reading and making decisions about it for yourself, and we want to show you a lot of interesting information. But the Washington Post observed right up front that one of the things that resulted from that decision was there isn't a whole lot of Jesus in this museum. In the sense that they tried to make it, this is the world's view of this important view of the Bible. And thus we want to remain accessible, not just to Christians of a traditional kind, but, you know, issues of Jewish scholarship. And what would some of this mean perhaps to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? And what does the Bible, you know, how does it reference Islam, or how does it fit into the world of Islam? In other words, this is how the world looks at the Bible, not how evangelical Protestants look at the Bible, although there are critics that say it's still too evangelical. I thought the Post raised a really interesting point, which is it going to please the very people that you would expect to be its primary audience? I think tacked onto that, and they made a brief reference, and they went skipping past this quickly enough that it was one of the subjects I predict the reporters wanted to deal with, and I think they'll go back to it. They compared it to another museum in Washington right now that's really struggling and is being buried, mixed metaphor here. It's swimming in an ocean of red ink, and that would be a museum I like quite a bit called the Newseum. And the central issue there was, are there enough Americans who are interested enough in journalism to plunk down $20+ to go to the Newseum? And so far, the evidence seems to be that there aren't. Well, the Museum of the Bible is going to be free admissions. But at the same time, they're counting on big crowds to come out. And when you look at who in America is interested in the Bible, a high percentage of those people, based on their personal life and practices, would be evangelical Protestant Christians. So I thought the Washington Post raised a perfectly valid point, which is, are evangelicals going to be happy with this museum? Now, a fault of the article, and I think that was due to lack of length, there's something I pointed out in my article about this. You know that people were cramped for space. When you get an interview, you do an interview with Mark Knoll, the author of the incredibly important The Scandal of the Evangelical Mind. You do an interview with Mark Knoll, the prominent historian, and you only get to use two sentences from him. And you don't even have room to identify him as the author of The Scandal of the Evangelical Mind. And you also don't have the room to note the very interesting fact that this is a man who made his reputation at Wheaton College and then moved from Wheaton College to Notre Dame to teach evangelicalism at the University of Notre Dame, which is not exactly, you know, a Protestant, evangelical Protestant stronghold. It's kind of a symbolic school of another kind, which raises another issue. What are Roman Catholics going to think of this? And the article makes a fascinating point that there may be Protestants who enter this museum and are offended by the museum's treatment of Mary as someone who, in centuries of Christian thought and tradition, Mary, the mother of Jesus, is a saint and is presented as such. Well, will there be Protestants who think this museum is too Mary-friendly? I mean, they may turn to a pillar of salt if the word Theotokos is used, to use the Orthodox term. So I think at this point you can see that there's a lot of very interesting, complex, and yes, that overused word, controversial issues hanging over this. I'll mention one more real quick. You mentioned the controversies, the justifiable controversies, about how some of the artifacts in this museum were obtained. And people have asked questions about, in effect, did they purchase things that were only on the market or even the black market because they were stolen by ISIS or by other people? And these Christian and biblical pieces of archaeology were out there to be purchased. Is it ethical to purchase things under those conditions? That raises another huge damned if you do and damned if you don't argument. Well, do you purchase them in order to save them so the public has some chance to see them? Or is it unethical to purchase stolen items, period? And that calls to mind another museum question from the past, which was, what about all the art collectors and museums that were accused of purchasing Jewish items that were stolen during the Holocaust, or things that people smuggled out during the Holocaust, and then they went up for sale? So this side of museum life, dealing with religion and dealing with archaeology and history, that can get controversial too. There's a lot to write here.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris of the Ruth Institute will be with us to talk about three things: the ideology that produces men like Harvey Weinstein, California offering a third gender option in many of its official documents, non-binary, and the medical risks of homosexuality. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris on Issues Etc. right after the break.
smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.